We'll spend the next few minutes with Jack Benest and chat about radio's past and present in Vancouver and British Columbia. He is the creator and webmaster of bcradiohistory.net, which we'll also talk about. I've always wanted to say this. All over British Columbia, hello.
Hello.
Good morning, Jack.
Thank you.
Talk to me about your career in radio. When did you start in radio?
About 1969, but I'll go back just a little bit further. As a child and someone who sat in his bedroom as a child and created music with records and sounded like a radio announcer. This is often the story that you'll hear from many broadcasters, that before they ever got near a radio station, they had created the radio star in their mind. So I left school and had a couple of years with Texaco Canada Limited in their administration offices, and then I went to BCIT.
Who were some of the people that you listened to growing up that inspired you to go into
BCIT? Well, there was a man called Shane, and he was on, I believe it's KGA in Spokane, and he was, that signal came into the Okanagan Valley very strong in the late 60s, and the people were really impressed with this man because he just really was something special. And there are tapes of him out there in Radioland even today, and he kind of went away, but I'm saying that those are the kinds of people that you would listen to. I would get C-Fun signals into my bedroom in Oliver in the 60s, and you'd hear these big, beautiful voices and jingles and top-notch music beaming in. Local radio really was not something that kids particularly liked. They liked foreign signals.
Now, you went to BCIT, and some of your classmates were Laurie Irvin, Lundy Sanderson, and Doug Short.
Those are the three teachers, just for...
Oh, really? Okay.
I went to a night school course while still working for Texaco, and Laurie Irvin, if you do some research, is a wonderful gentleman who's passed away now, but he was at the foundation of radio in Vancouver at CKWX and all the drama. The other two gentlemen were also from WX. A lot of WX people were involved at the teaching level when BCIT first started.
Was that an interesting time to go to school in 69 and to go to BCIT at the time?
Well, it was interesting, but I'm just saying that it's a very difficult question to answer on the basis of going to school today, going to school then. Everything, when you're young, you absorb very quickly. And it was exciting because the equipment at BCIT was better than probably most radio stations in British Columbia. So you trained on the best equipment and then found out later that that's not exactly what you would work with later.
So your first job in radio was where?
Morris P. Finnerty was the owner of Okanagan Radio and CKOK in Penticton, and he was closely affiliated with the start of BCIT. All of the broadcasters in BC wanted this school to train young people because radio needs a lot of people. Even to this day, there's a heavy turnover because it's the nature of that business. And he got told, I guess indirectly, something that there was an Okanagan boy being trained in the night school course, and he said, get that person to phone him, and I did, and he hired me in the Okanagan.
So what did you do at CKOK? Was that in news, or...?
Well, they sent me to Asuyas to work with a fellow by the name of Dave Gamble, who ran a station called CKOO for Oliver Asuyas, and I got about a year's training there, and then I went to Penticton to do some work there, and then ultimately was hired away to Chilliwack.
And in Chilliwack, that was before you came to Vancouver?
Yep. It's all very kind of linear, meaning I started in Asuyas, went to Penticton, went to Chilliwack, went to CJOR, and then right to CKNW.
Now, you wrote me an email that it took you 3 years to get to Vancouver. I guess that's the dream of anybody who comes from like this small town, not only in British Columbia, but throughout the continent, that they want to make it big in the big city, right?
Yes, not everybody, because depending on your circumstances, some people got into broadcasting and had already married and might have children, and then they would become more kind of career-oriented in a Kelowna or a Vernon, and ultimately maybe make program director and station manager.
WR, did you?
I first worked as an operator because that's the jobs that were available. A fellow by the name of John Barton, who has a long history in radio, was the program director at that time, and he hired about 10 young people to be operators for these talk show stars like Pat Burns and Jack Webster and Jim Nielsen and Chuck Cook and John Reynolds, and the list goes on. But that I did that for about a year until somebody in the newsroom said, you know, really, you should probably move into the newsroom because you have a respectable voice and that news is not affected by ratings as much as for disc jockeys or people that want to be talent on the air.
Working at CGOR at the time, you mentioned some of the people that you worked with as an operator. Sort of put that in perspective, CGOR's place in the market at the time that you were there.
Well, when I started, it was when they were under new ownership of Jim Pattison. They had a new general manager, Don Wall, and Pat Burns had returned from Montreal, and Jim Pattison said, let's take on the big guys, and they invested big money by hiring Jack Webster and building him a brand new studio in Gastown, because he wouldn't work in the dungeon, which was Howe Street underneath the Grosvenor Hotel, is where CGOR Studios had been located since 1930, and they were in pretty rough shape, so big talent wouldn't work there. But anyway, that was the start of a war or a fight between Pattison, CJOR, and CKNW, which had been the ratings leader for many, many, many years. And it was a very interesting chapter of radio history, but also a very interesting time in Vancouver, because in 1972, Dave Barrett and the NDP defeated W.A.C. Bennett, who had been government for 20 years, and a lot of things really changed in the early 70s, including hairstyles. But it was an exciting time to be in Vancouver, and it was an exciting time to be in radio, and if I'm living in the past today, it's that period that I'm thinking about.
Now, in terms of ratings, how did CGOR do compared to CKNW?
Well, prior to the hiring of Jack Webster, their numbers would be so low that it really wouldn't be called respectable. There were many other radio stations that were playing music in CKWX, C-Fun, CKLG that were probably had better numbers than CGOR did prior to Webster coming. And once Webster came, in his time period, he peaked for one rating period sometime in 1973, I believe, as the number one show. But then it became steady, and NW took alternative kind of actions to maintain their numbers. And ultimately, Webster went to television, and then CJOR just basically went back to its earlier low numbers.
So after CJOR, where did Jack Benes go?
Well, I wasn't really there at CJOR very long, believe it or not. It's funny to talk about history because so much happened so quickly, but that period was so intense and so important and so exciting that it seems like 30 years. But NW hired me into their newsroom within about a year and a half of me being at CJOR, and I was at CKNW for almost 10 years.
So were you a beat reporter? Was that your job? Or?
Mainly, but when I first got there, because they didn't know too much about me or what I would ultimately be good at, they put me into kind of a swing capacity of doing on-air newsreader duties and being out on the beat. At one time, I was given the privilege of reading and writing editorials that Warren Barker, the news director, would normally do, and that was a great honor, and I have some of those still on tape today.
Talk to me about some of the mentors you had in your career. You gave me a list, and perhaps you'd want to go through that list and just talk about why they were so influential to you.
Well, every person that I mentioned to you as a mentor, there probably was 10 other people right there at the time, but certain people were people that I respected, looked up to, and were friendly and helpful. And there's radios full of egos and stars and whatever, and often you find that the mentors are the ones that will spend time with you and really want to help you, because you never know who's going to be your boss later. But In Penticton, Cal George, who had come from CKWX, was very helpful. He's alive and well and kicking and still golfing in Penticton. George Sillery was a newsman in the CJOR newsroom, and he's the one that talked to me about joining the newsroom. He had a beautiful voice. He was trained by the Lorne Green School of Broadcasting in Ontario, and he had come from CHQM, and he had been the news director. He was a very, very nice man, and unfortunately, he's passed away. Another man that was instrumental was Erwin Swangard, who is the former managing editor of the Vancouver Sun, who had been hired by Mr. Pattison to run his newsroom. Erwin didn't know very much about radio, but he certainly knew a lot about news and really was a fine teacher of what makes news and what people like to see and read and hear. And other names on that list that I failed to remember exactly who's in there. Grant Sherwood, who was a man who had many physical difficulties and was in a wheelchair, but had a powerful voice and was the program director in Penticton. He was a great guy. Can't think of anybody else at the moment.
Erwin Swangard, Father Ingham wrote of him as being menacing even when he was sitting. Was that your experience with him, and did you make fun of his accent?
No, this was, I think I met Erwin Swangard when he was quite old and had, I think a lot of his rough edges had been taken off, and all of the stories that Fotheringham and other people that worked at the Sun probably are very accurate, very true, but not quite the Erwin that I thought of as a cuddly kind of bear in many ways that I met. He was a very nice person. He'd done a lot of things in the world, but he'd had a rough life as a child coming over from Germany, and I don't think everybody respected his background as much as that ultimately whoever hired him and placed him in the positions he had understood that he had talent. How do you become the head of the Vancouver Sun without having talent?
Talk to me about Pat Burns, and when did you first meet Burns, and what was it about him that you liked about Pat Burns?
Well, it's like or dislike, and Pat would say it this way. He says, I don't care whether you like me or hate me as long as you listen to me. And Pat was a person that I met through just being his operator, but he was a bit parental at times and would treat you as a son. I don't think he had any children. I don't think he ever really got married to anyone. He was an anachronism. I can't think of big words to describe this man that in some ways was very lonely, an alcoholic, somebody that was very, very brainy, somebody that didn't have a university degree, somebody that had worked in Montreal, in London, England, in Vancouver. 10,000 people marched on the Queen Elizabeth Theatre when he was fired from the radio station in 1963. That will never, ever, ever happen again.
You said that it was quite a ride to work for him, quite a ride for 15 years that you knew him. You worked as an operator. Did you get to socialize with him off? Outside the radio station?
There was a bar upstairs, and whether it was Ed Murphy or Dave Abbott or Pat Burns, after work we would all get to have too many drinks. And that way you saw the many sides of the personality. And one of my kind of stories about Dave Abbott was that I remember leaving the hotel and jumping in a cab with him, and he just said to the cab driver, I'm David Abbott, just put it on my account. And I, as a little boy from the Okanagan, I just couldn't figure out how anybody could be that powerful.
Were there any, if you talked about the sort of parental and the sort of the camaraderie that was had amongst all of you, were there feuds? You talked about egos earlier, so I assume that there was tension.
Well, there's tension between, Webster and Burns had been competitors for years, and whenever you have two very, very strong egos, normally they will cohabitate the same space for about 2 minutes and no more, because they just can't stand having anybody that's that strong nearby. And strong personalities normally like to have minions and people that follow them around and say yes sir, no sir, three bags full. But when you have two strong egos together, often they don't get along.
I guess there was. I've been reading a bit on radio. There was never anything physical, like a physical confrontation between the two, Webster and Burns, right?
Oh, I don't think so. I don't think they really were ever in contact. When they worked together in the same radio station, as I mentioned before, Pat Burns basically owned the space that CJOR was in the bottom of the Grosvenor Hotel, and Jack Webster said, well, I have to have a completely new studio, and I want it built in a mod area of Gastown. And he got all his wishes, and that way he really didn't have to have any contact with anyone at the radio station. He just did his show. I was lucky enough to get in on the ground floor of assisting the engineer in preparing that studio and meeting Webster, but I don't think he would have remembered me from that period as much as once I was on the news and once I had been hired from CKNW. Then he had respect for that and for that station, and that's how Jack Webster was. He would be hired by CJOR, but his ear would still be on NW's newsroom.
Talk to me about the website and bcradiohistory.net and how that started and what you attempt to do with it.
Well, I've been in the career that I am in now for 21 years, which has nothing to do with radio and is so far away from it that it's not worthy of mention. But it took almost that long before I said I really do want to make a piece of history come alive, and that was the period that I was in radio. So I invented, with some advice from friends and associates, to invent a website called BC Radio History and to make it a portal that links to so many other websites and historical pages about radio in that era that it's not all about me, it's all about the people that have been in radio in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, for about 50 years of radio, but it grows every day with pictures and biographies and other kind of memorabilia. Some people are into stickers and charts and all kinds of things and audio clips, and I'm not really into that yet because it's just not something that there's so much work to be done to document the 10 best broadcasters of each of the 5 or 6 radio stations that operated in Vancouver during that period. Now, on the radio dial today, there is so much competition and so many AM stations and so many FM stations that most people, I think, don't keep track anymore. They may have their favorite, and that's about it. But in the old days, in the 40s and 50s, there was 2 or 3 radio stations that that people would go between, depending on what was on the air. And CJOR was a leader in the 40s, and Red Robinson came to CJOR in 1954 and then took them into a new period of rock and roll and teenagers and power of kids, but that didn't last long. And it's CKWX was a big station. CKNW started as a very small hick country and western station in New Westminster and worked on its programming and hiring people and became number one and basically is still number one today.
Did you find that there was a great need for history on the web about radio?
Is there a need?
Need for it.
I have no idea. I would say no, there is no need for any history about radio based on the reaction that generally I get from the general public. The people that are interested in my website are the people that are either on it or connected to those. I get pictures from family collections of owners of people that started radio stations in the hinterland. Before the end of this year, I hope to have linked into the Red Robinson photo collection. There's just so many collected data out there that I think should have access to the world of the internet. And whether or not there is a demand, I really don't know. There's really no way of knowing who's interested and who's not.
I would say that there would be a need, just my observation, that people want to see more, read more, find out about some of the people that they used to listen to, or people like myself who weren't around, we want to just get a little taste of the past.
But I think you're rare, and to take that as a compliment, there's you as a young nerd who's just got this bent for certain things, and that people like I'm no. You two other interviews that I noticed that you had. The one was with Red and the author of the latest book of that they co-authored. One was Rafe Mayer, and one was Gary Bannerman. There's no way that I'm ever going to be associated with their status and league because they are way more important in radio history than I am. But and I think that ultimately, if my name or my place in history will be as the biographer, and I just happened to work with people like Fotheringham and Wasserman, and was there when he died, and it was a very, very interesting chapter of Vancouver when you could meet such wonderful and talented people. And I also happen to have a knack of kind of collecting a fair amount of documentation from the era, so that helped too.
You mentioned the Red Robinson book, and that was a bestseller in the province. And from that, I gleaned that people do want to read up and see more. And so,
well, ultimately, like historical books, historical records, and I think that Red has always had his fingers on the pulse of British Columbia to a larger extent than I have. He knows what people are interested in, but he also knows that more and more, and if you read his editorial, more and more of what is now called radio is not worth talking about, and that it's just a huge conglomerate business now that where talent is not important. And you and I think we're going to get into my thoughts on modern radio, so this would probably be a good opportunity.
Yeah, when I talked to Gary Bannerman, he said that radio today was beneath contempt. You talked to me earlier about changes in technology. Where do you see radio going in the next 10, 15, 20 years?
Well, radio as we knew it, I think, has gone. People still listen to radio in their cars. More and more people are listening to radio on the internet because you can stream. You can find a nice radio station in Chicago that you really like and like the sound to it and say, well, the heck with anybody in BC, I'm going to listen to that station. And many people do. So radio will change. Radio signals will soon come from satellites, and the quality will be better, and maybe there won't be any advertising, and you'll pay a subscription fee. And that will change the nature of radio. But a lot of what I call the talent is gone from radio. And that is that you no longer turn on your radio to hear a specific person who's going to communicate and entertain with you. Often you're just connecting to a jukebox, which is playing a whole bunch of music that you probably don't really like. And the information from the news department is no longer as good as it was 35 years ago, and we're supposed to be in a period of progress. So I'm just saying, in my estimation, radio is beneath contempt.
And I was just thinking, you worked in news. There isn't news investigative journalism anymore in radio news, is there?
And well, but let's explore that for a second. A lot of investigative journalism and great news teams came because there was competition. There really isn't competition today because all the owners of radio stations own anywhere from 2 to 4 stations each in a major market. And all they do is add up the numbers of all of their stations, and it looks very, very impressive to advertisers, and that's really what it comes down to. If you can sell your advertising, if the companies make money, then who cares really what's spewing out over the airwaves? Now, I know I would get argument from those professional broadcasters who are in the business today because they're living in the real world that they live in. But I'm saying from an outsider's point of view, for people like Gary who have studied radio, they just know that it's really, there's nothing to listen to. There's nothing interesting anymore.
Well, this is something current, but CKNW recently put a network show in prime time, which would be the afternoons, noon to 3 o'clock. Well, what do you make of that? Is that a trend, do you think, that more network programming, less local programming on radio?
Well, I don't, my first impression about that is that that's a test to see whether or not he can maintain some numbers, and if he doesn't, they'll switch that in the fall when they are forced.
passed, right?
It has from the point of view of those people, but tomorrow could bring three new people to the radio transmitter if they were hired by the corporations. But I'm saying the corporations now are really not fighting that hard to be number one, that they're willing to spend a lot of money. But I think I missed my point on that competitive nature of news. The reason that the news is not as great as it used to be is that money is not being spent, and stations are not really competing with each other, and therefore they don't have to do it. There's no pride. NW has lost a lot of its pride because it has very few reporters, and they used to have massive number of people during the day and the weekends working to scoop the world and be ahead of the newspapers. And to think that every radio station and every newspaper in Vancouver or the greater Vancouver area monitored CKNW every hour because they were the news leader, that's a high respect, and they probably still do it today, but there really isn't much to listen for.
Now, talk to me about just the physical changes in technology. You said earlier off tape that if people of your generation went to a newsroom today or a studio today, it would be foreign to them. Are you amazed at the changes in technology? You told me that you were used to work with vinyl and tape recorders.
Yeah, well, I'm just saying, like, records used to be kind of, they called them wax, but they weren't. But you'd be spinning discs and back cueing and using tape recorders that would break down, and the tape would be so brittle that it would fall apart. And that's been replaced by, you know, like right now, you will be digitizing, I believe, this interview, and people may have access to it on the Internet in a digital kind of way, and that's... But technology is supposed to add something, and I'm saying that if you really go back to the best amplifiers in the world, they still use them, and they have tubes in them. If you really want to have top quality lots of things, you have to go back 50 years, because a lot of modernization is plastic. It just has not really added. It's added speed. A lot of our modern life of cell phones and electronic toys is all about speed, not about quality.
And you said earlier that changes in technology advance radio, and I guess in terms of content, it hasn't.
No, because content's all about humans, really. Ultimately, I could even say that I think music has changed so much that I'm not too sure who I could truly recognize today as being artists that will live forever, and that they appeal to a mass of people from a kind of a quality point of view. When I turn on radio now, I listen for something familiar, and that doesn't mean that old, just something familiar. And I hear a lot of whiny people. I was going to say women, but I can't do that. Whiny songs going on and on and on that have no rhythm. Think of the hits from the 60s and the 50s that had like a real strong message for they almost changed kids and changed the world and changed fashions, and I see nothing like that anymore.
Now, bcradiohistory.net, you will continue that, will you?
Oh, until I'm old and gray, and I'm still a young man.
And what can people expect in the future if they...
Oh, just more of the same, really. There is so much work to do. I could have a staff of 35, but that will never happen because it's very expensive, and this is just a nice little website. But I was talking to a gentleman in Vancouver about a year ago, and we were down to Vancouver on different business. And I said, I have this little website. And I said, because it's such a niche market, I said, I will have the best website of its kind in the world on this subject. And it is. All of the other websites in BC on radio history have different ways of doing things, and they all link to my site, and my site links to theirs. One of them is Vancouver Broadcasting. my site, you can link to all of those.
BCRadioHistory.net is the website. I've been talking with Jack Benest. Jack, thanks so much for doing this today. And do check out his website. He's in all over British Columbia. I'm in Vancouver. Joseph Plana for thecommentary.ca.